Hello everyone, it's Adam from UkraFoot24 with another exciting episode of the Ukrainian Football Review. It's been a great week as always out here in Ukraine. We've had Ingelets advertising on social media for their new executive director. We've had Metalist 1925 give their strong account in the battle for supremacy in Kharkiv, a strong attendance this weekend. And the Ukrainian ladies team went viral after their playoff defeat in Northern Ireland. But we have to, of course, discuss today the Premier League. We've had the biggest game of the year took place last night. And who better to join us than the first ever international commentator in Portuguese of a game live on from the Ukrainian League, Felipe Petrosino de Rocha. Now, Felipe, I hope I've pronounced the name correctly there. Well, good evening. It's great to have you with us. How are you?
Very good pronunciation, Adam. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
And I hope you've enjoyed been enjoying your time in Ukraine over the last few days.
Yes, I'm quite happy to be here. It's my second time in Ukraine. I actually came here in 2014, right after the Shakhtar moved from Donetsk to Kiev. So I came to interview some of the Brazilian players and understand their new reality. And it was a quite nice experience back then. So it's my second time here now. I came because of this big game at the weekend, and it's been great to be here. It's a lovely country, Adam.
It really is. It really is. And of course, as always, my two co-hosts wouldn't be anywhere without them. Andrew and Ray, good evening, gents. How are you?
Good evening. Good evening, Felipe. Good evening, Adam. And good evening, Ray. I think you forgot something, Adam, about maybe your own commentating last night. Adam was obviously on the English comms for the worldwide feed of the Klasichner and did a great job. I'm sure he'll give us a bit more of an update in a minute, but hopefully there'll be more to come in the future.
Fingers crossed, fingers crossed. Thank you for that, Andrew. I don't like to blow my own horn too much. Ray, good evening, mate. How you doing?
Evening, Adam. It's finally sunny today in Kiev. Not so dark as usual in the evening. So, yeah, enjoying it and hoping for a great episode. Nice job yesterday, by the way. It's quite legendary.
I think we had a great evening, didn't we, Felipe? Even if the performance wasn't so good. Well, before we get started, Andrew, as always, can we ask a brief summary of what went on before we get into the nitty gritty of the game itself?
Sure. So, ultimately, cut a long story short, because it was a long 90 minutes and not much actually happened, unfortunately. Dynamo Kyiv won 1-0, which was a key victory in their race to the title and are effectively de facto champions. Well, champions elect, you can say, because I think they need 2/3 points to secure it and can get that as early as next week with 4 games to go. The game was rather sort of tepid. We'll discuss the performances of individuals and the sides in a minute. But ultimately, it came down to a De Penna penalty after Marcus Antonio fouled Andrievski in the box. Bit of VAR looking at it, but I mean, you can't really complain. It was a push. De Penna scored an effective slip, but styled it out by finishing it in the bottom left-hand corner. And ultimately, that was probably the best chance on goal in the whole game. As you can see, Luchescu on the verge of becoming the first manager to win the UPL with 2 different clubs.
Certainly is. Felipe, of course, disappointing night from Shakhtar's perspective. You know, what's been sort of the viewpoint in Brazil in particular, looking at Shakhtar's performance this year? Has it been surprised with the fall-off in performance of Brazilian players in particular?
Yes, definitely. But first of all, let me disagree of what Andrew said. I think that the penalty is quite controversial. I do agree that you know, you cannot complain that much, but it's definitely a soft penalty. At least it was given by the referee, who did, is important to say, a good job throughout the game. But because I say at least, I mean by that it was not like a VAR penalty. So she gave at the moment, and then it was confirmed. But I do think it's quite soft one. But okay, there is a soft push there. And okay, so regarding the Shakhtar's performances, it's definitely disappointing what's happening at the moment and for most part of the season, for this season for the club. And yeah, especially with the Brazilian players, it's not the best moment. And it's far from it, to be honest. And in Brazil, Shakhtar have a lot of attention for obvious reasons. And but because of this current lack of performance of most of the Brazilian players, or at least some of them, the interest is not as it used to be in a recent past.
You reminded me there with the penalty. One thing I do have to ask Andrew as well. The Marais incident, penalty or not, when he went down. In the second half, when he went down under, I can't remember.
Yeah, Rodriguez. It was like a Rodriguez stuck his foot out. And there was like countless replays of it. I mean, one angle looked like it was like complete accident from Rodriguez, like he stuck his foot out or there was like little contact. But I mean, ultimately, that could have been given any other day of the week. So I'm not entirely sure why it wasn't. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it didn't look like Shakhtar were going to threaten any other way. And it probably wouldn't have had a massive impact on the result anyway, because Luchescu turned up to the game aiming for a draw. Basically, that's how it looked. He couldn't care less if they won or not. That was actually a bonus that they won. Ultimately, it was just that game plan of sitting back, controlling the play, allowing Shakhtar to attack, passing it across the park, you know, having an advantage on possession. But ultimately, there was literally no intensity, like just no sort of creative opportunity other than like a couple of chances like Solomon very early on, and then it just all faded away for Shakhtar really. And especially that second half was quite difficult to sort of stay in touch with. It was a tough one, but it was, if anything, you could say a Luchescu masterclass, maybe not anti-football, but just a way of fully getting the result, sort of Jose Mourinho style, if you want to put it that way.
Really was. I mean, I have to ask Felipe here. You know, from of course, it was my first experience giving live commentary on a game, and the second half, personally, I found very difficult to keep the momentum going as the game just petered out into a 1-0. On the which I was talking to people after the game, I said I was very happy that there were so many substitutions because it gave me something to talk about. Now, Felipe, you have a lot more experience in this. Is it something that's quite common? And how do you keep going when the games are, as Andrew summed it up quite, you know, aptly there, when it is anti-football that's taking place?
Yeah, it's much more difficult when the game is like that, isn't it? It's definitely is more difficult. And yes, yesterday was a quite tough one to commentate. You have to go with information, context and all of that stuff. If it's not happening anything special on the pitch, you gotta have something to say. But it wasn't easy yesterday.
Certainly wasn't. I think at one stage I speculated if Fernando got his hair cut the same place as Mikhail Mudryk with the new bleach look. But what else can we do? I was surprised Matvienko was left back when I saw the starting lineup. I actually thought he had a good game. I don't know. You know, when we're looking at Shakhtar's performance, it was very hard to find the highlights. But Matvienko gave a lot of good presence down the left-hand side. And there was a good article in Tribuna this morning that highlighted, especially early on, when in that first 15 minutes where Shakhtar actually looked quite good, I thought, how with him pushing on down the left-hand side, sort of gave them the overload. If I'm right, Andrew, it did kind of lead to Solomon's early chance as well on that side of the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Matvienko was probably the bright part of Shakhtar's performance last night. And, you know, it's ironic that, okay, he is a sort of, he has played left back for a lot of his career, but ultimately he's their first choice centre back, really. Bondad had an okay game as well, but, you know, you can't really judge either team's like attacking in that game because there was nothing really there to go off. Like I mentioned earlier, Solomon had an okay opportunity right at the beginning, and I thought maybe he might build on that as he has done in previous Klasiczners, but just nothing stuck together and just nothing came out of that. And whilst we're on the Matvienko topic, I guess there's news coming out this morning that apparently following the Dynamo game, he has got in contact, met up with something. He's met up with an agent who's got ties to Son Heung-min, Dele Alli and some other players. And Tottenham is apparently his potential destination this summer. I mean, he's been linked with Liverpool in January, I think, when they were having that, you know, random buy any defender crisis to try and replace Van Dijk because he's injured. And then last winter transfer window, he was heavily linked with Arsenal and very close to joining them. So a bit of a turnaround in North London, but we'll see what happens, really.
I'd like to see him go. I think it'll help him develop in his career. You know, you look at players like him, he's what, 24 now, 25. It's the time when they need to move. We're talking here, we've got Felipe here. In Brazil, if they've got to 24 and they haven't left Brazil, that's it, it's game over. Is there any chance of them moving to Europe? In Brazil, it seems to be when you're 18, that's the time to go, never mind 24.
Yeah, and it's getting always getting like earlier for the players, right, to move to Europe. And Shakhtar is a great example of that. They are perhaps better than anyone else to identify talent, quality youngsters in Brazil and bring them in. They do a great job.
Now, I mean, we're all expecting here Shakhtar to have a big overhaul in the summer. Obviously, Tyson, we'll discuss him in a minute, left just on Friday. Are there any good youngsters at the moment in Brazil that you've heard any at all that Shakhtar have been linked with, interested in? Any names that we could look out for?
To be honest, there is because of Tyson, I was reading the other day, but honestly, I don't remember the name of the youngsters. They are they perhaps are keen youngster, obviously from Internacional. But the thing is, what Shakhtar normally do in Brazil is to identify this kind of players that we even in Brazil we are not like too. We don't know them very well. So they get the players, not always. Obviously, sometimes they do get players who are already playing for the Seleção under 20 or something like that. It's been the case in several occasions. But sometimes they get players like under 17 and then it's a bit more difficult to tell if they will, you know, succeed in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about Tyson. I guess it's probably that time. And Andrew, you mentioned before, was it Shakhtar were offered a 30 million for him a few years back? Am I right?
Yeah, well, the sort of the news around it was that I think Shakhtar were offered around 30 million euros. I don't know whether it was three 3, maybe 2 years ago from Roma, apparently. They turned that down. Then obviously, I think, you know, you could probably say that his transfer value fell down a bit more. I mean, what is he? Quite old now, 34, 30, 33 or something. He's quite old now.
33.
And yeah, so obviously that decreased. And as you can see now, he left on a free transfer before his contract even finished properly. It all sort of, officially in the front, it sort of looks like it's finished amicably. With, you know, the farewell video, like a nice presentation of a shirt. But ultimately, he played his last game for Shakhtar for the under-21s because he was banished there because he didn't want to come on as a sub. He fell out with Luis Castro and, you know, and he ended his career on 299 appearances for Shakhtar. And, you know, OCD for round-up numbers, that's just not good for anyone. They could have easily maybe given him 5 minutes yesterday or something like that for a proper send-off. But it just seems like slightly poor hierarchy management at the moment, just on the basis of, you know, you take examples from Bernard as well. He had plenty of opportunities to leave Shakhtar, I think, for big money. Well, there was rumours anyway, and then he eventually moved to Everton for free, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
And same with Kovalenko. He was linked, you know, when he was in his like proper development, top boy, top youngster. I think he's linked with United and many other clubs, and, you know, probably could have got up to 15 million euros for him at one point, but here he is and he left for Atalanta for free, or like 1.5 million or, you know, something completely meagre compared to what they're actually worth. And then it just sort of brings into doubt what's actually the big plan with Shakhtar. If they're selling all these players for literally nothing, especially with the track record that they've had in the past, I guess, you know, 2-3 years ago, where they're selling the likes of Fred, Teixeira and all that lot for big, big money. Do they think that's unfeasible now? Or like, it's just difficult to understand. But one thing that is very evident is that they need a complete overhaul this summer, especially after that Klasicic performance, which many are saying probably their worst ever, potentially, sort of thing, just in terms of the way they played and didn't create anything.
I'm going to bring Ray in here comment. Sorry, Felipe.
No, sorry. I'm sorry. Just to get the things right, just to mention the name of the youngster of Internacional. So the media, the story in Brazil is that Shakhtar would be interested in this guy. It's a 17 years old right back called Vinicius Tobias. So he plays for the youth teams of Internacional, and Shakhtar would have agreed to let Tyson go before his contract was finished because of a potential interest in this guy. So it's a name to pay attention. Perhaps he would at some point eventually appears here with the Shakhtar shirt.
It's interesting that he's a right back. I mean, Greg, first of all, can you think of a worse performance in recent history of Shakhtar and Klasicny compared to last night? And secondly, based on what Felipe said, that for me, right back is one area of the pitch where Shakhtar actually look quite strong. Are you surprised that they've identified a right back? Is that the key area that needs to be fixed in Shakhtar at the moment? Or where do you see the biggest problems?
Yeah, well, first of all, I honestly couldn't remember worse Shakhtar performances. I got used to Dinamo's playing quite, you know, struggling with Shakhtar and Klasicny as they lost their first match this season 3-0. And now they lost and they won the Shakhtar. Yeah, I remember some boring scenarios, like in 2010 in the Bus Arena, they played 0-0. Shevchenko was playing and that was a big match, but it didn't solve anything. So the intrigue wasn't there. Apparently this was the opposite case this time. Speaking of defenders, yeah, Dodo seems quite confident in his position. Apart from what's his substitute? I think it's one of Ukrainian guys. Is it Kornienko? Could be Butko as well? Or no, Butko left, I think.
Bolbat,
yeah, that's right. So yeah, it doesn't seem like a problem. Maybe it's just a rumor, but still, I remember this situation when Willian and Douglas Costa left, as well as Alex Teixeira moving to China. And everyone said that we have a substitutions for that. We have Tyson, Marlos, and Alan Patrick. And I was thinking back then, and everyone realized that they are not as good and prominent as Willian and Douglas Costa obviously were. And in terms of time moving on, we saw that there wasn't such big results like Champions League quarterfinals with Shakhtar in the last 5 years. They were quite good in Champions League and Europa League, but still it was like this downfall of Brazilians and Shakhtar. And that's, I would say, this is the cathartic moment of it now, where this is the moment of rebuild, whether they go for more young Brazilians as they have now, Maicon, Cipriano, Marcos Antonio, who, in my opinion, should be given more playing time, as well as Tete, and these guys need to step up. But are they going to be as good as the first sort of wave of Brazilians, like Douglas Costa and Willian, or the second, or the very new one, which is just going to leave straight away and they're going to focus on Ukrainian youngsters? We shall see, but it's a question of management. Obviously, CEO Serhii Palkin, there are a lot of questions to him regarding the transfers of Kovalenko moving on for free, Tyson, Bernard, whom Andrew mentioned, and obviously the coach, which is who is Luis Castro. Apparently, the Zerbi is in talks, but I think we're going to move on to that a bit further more.
We certainly are. Well, that was going to be my follow-up question, guys. Obviously, today, you know, it's been reported in the media that Shakhtar are in quite advanced talks with De Zerbi for the Sassuolo coach. I hope I pronounced that team right. Keep getting praised these days for my pronunciation. I like it. How is that going to work then? Obviously, they went for Fonseca and Castro because of the being Portuguese, you know, sharing the mutual language with the Brazilian players, bringing in an Italian coach. Now, Italian and Portuguese, there are some linguistical links there, but I mean, culturally, it's a lot further separated. How's it going to work? Felipe, do you see that working with De Zerbi coming in with the young Brazilian talent there?
Well, obviously it's not the same language, but why not? I mean, De Zerbi, he already works with two Brazilians at Sassuolo, so he might know how it is. And yeah, he's a quite young manager. He's doing a great job in Italy. So it would be, in my opinion, a good try in case Shakhtar decides that Luis Castro must not stay, which I must say that Luis Castro, obviously the moment is far from being good, but Luis Castro is also a very clever manager, in my opinion. And in Portugal, he has a very good reputation. He did a great job, especially the last one before moving to Ukraine. It was a very good job at Vitória Guimarães.
Definitely so. Right.
Yeah, that reminds me, that would have been a great restart for Shakhtar. As we remember, 20 years ago, the first foreign manager who won the championship for Shakhtar was Nevio Scala, and he was Italian, so why not?
Ah, yes. The full circle of life kicks back in. I mean, we have to discuss Dinamo as well. Missing Sidorchuk, missing Sagankov, obviously wasn't fully fit. Sidorchuk had been a star player over the last few weeks there. Very impressive performance by the replacements, Andrievski and Shepelov in midfield. See, Andrew, you're nodding along. Felipe, were you impressed with Dinamo?
Yes, especially with Andrievski. What a game. He controlled the middle of the park, was quite impressive, his performance yesterday. And as Andrew said in the beginning of the show, Dinamo did. The game went exactly, or even better, as Andrew said, as they planned. So it was like a masterclass, using Andrew's expression, because they were in control of the game, and it was far from being a beautiful performance, but it went as they wanted. So it was a very mature performance from them.
Really was. Another guy I want to give credit to as well, because, I mean, he's received a lot of criticism for going missing in big games recently, as Artem Bezedin. I was very impressed with his performance. I don't know, Andrew, you're smiling there. Do you disagree with me?
I just mean, in the sense that he's a forward, he didn't do much. But as they say, he's the best defensive forward in the league. So you could give him that accolade for yesterday's performance. Yeah, like ultimate sort of hold up. Okay, he had that chance where he was offside, went close. And he's just got that presence, I guess, that, you know, can help break up play, etc., if need be. But, you know, I guess if Shakhtar were on their game and not as bad as they were yesterday, he would have been a lot more ineffective. So that's why I want to sort of take the Dinamo performance with a pinch of salt, just on the basis that Shakhtar was so bad that I think it slightly excels how good Dinamo actually were, especially the fact that they were playing without Sidorchuk and Tsakhnov with their key players. Full credit to Shepelev and Andrievsky. They had sort of won the games of their lives. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, would a performance like that against a top European side, for example, in the Champions League or Europa League, have done enough? I don't know. So I think there's still definitely work to be done from Dinamo's perspective. They probably need some strengthening in certain positions. But ultimately, Luchescu's done a great job with what he's had. And evidently improvements from the sort of decline that came under Hatzkevich and Mihailichenko.
Definitely. Well, before we move on, I think Felipe, you'll join me in this, and I know Andrew and Ray as well. With Shakhtar as a club away from the pitch, deserve a lot of credit for their development with this game, being the first club to make a game like this available for the global audience. I think it shows a huge progressive step for things, and, you know, all credit to the marketing department for coming up with such an initiative. I've been receiving a lot of positive feedback, and I know there were certainly a lot of viewers been receiving comments from Germany, from the UK, from the States over the last 24 hours. It was as we turned 7:30 on Sunday evening. Mm-hmm. It's certainly been receiving a lot of credit there, so well done to Shakhtar for actually broadcasting it. I know, Andrew, you were watching from the UK from a technical side of it. I've been hearing that there were no problems with sort of picture feeds and things work well for what was and has been reported in the media. You know, it was their first time, it was their trial, and it does seem like they've got bigger things planned for next season, which will be great to help Ukrainian football grow on the global scale.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like a lack of buffering and that sort of stuff. You know, even when it's not down to your own bandwidth or anything like that. Audio was all good, and yeah, so it's just solid stuff all round. So hopefully that there is going to be extra stuff coming up next season and sort of pushing on from that, especially after, I think, hopefully the Euros give a bit of a platform for Ukrainian football with Ukraine performing there, and it'll give maybe a bit of a stream to more people getting excited in the league and beyond.
Definitely. I mean, Felipe, have you been hearing anything from the Portuguese speaking world?
The same, exactly the same as you said, Adam. The reaction couldn't be better. And I replicate your words. It's a very interesting idea from Shakhtar. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they will move on. And when it comes to Brazil, it's obviously a special relationship. I mean, in the last two World Cups, Shakhtar had Brazil had a player, a Shakhtar player in the squad. In the last one, Bernard was playing for Shakhtar and represented Brazil in Russia. In 2014, there were guys from Shakhtar as well. In 2014 was Bernard. In the last one, Fred and Tyson, so two players. And if we look beyond the World Cup, there are a lot of examples of Brazilians who got their first calls to the national team playing for Shakhtar Donetsk. And even if it was not the first call, there are several examples of Brazilians, of Shakhtar who played for Brazil, Luiz Adriano, Yusinho, even Smiley, Fernando. Well, the list is long, and so the connections are very strong with Shakhtar and Brazil. So hopefully they will move on with this project. I see it can be very fruitful in Brazil.
Certainly hope so. Well, there's been a full fixture list this weekend. We're recording ahead of the Colos game, or the Colos game has just kicked off. But, well, first of all, the battle for bronze has got a little bit more intense over the last 24 hours. Vorskla took on Zorya on the Saturday afternoon. Andrew, how did that game go?
Rather surprising result, I guess, all things considered. It was the second Werder Bremen Ukrainian derby with former Werder Bremen players, Yuri Maksimov, Vorskla manager, and Viktor Skripnik. So the manager taking each other on after the first meeting back in November, which coincidentally was also on the same day as the Klasichna back then. That finished in a very boring 0-0. But this time it was a lot more interesting. Zorya started with quite an experimental midfield and back line. They had to have Svek starting. Tomchinovsky was playing right back. Ivan Isenia was that centre back again. I think just because of lack of fitness following some COVID things in the squad. Seidman, Esch and Zahedi started up top together. But unfortunately, they didn't impress after they were shown up by the Vorskla centre-forwards. Ruslan Stepanyuk opened the scoring, and then the new UPL top scorer, Vladislav Kulac, who's been on fire this season, got his first ever UPL hat-trick. And ultimately, Vorskla went 4-0 up and then ended up getting a bit complacent towards the end and won 4-2 after Hladky and Favrov scored late on. But ultimately, a big win in that race for bronze. Vorskla are on 37 points. Zorya are on 38 in third. So potentially Vorskla could do it if Zorya slip up again, just on the basis that Zorya have got a game in hand. So that could make it maybe mean that Zorya actually have got the edge in this one. But ultimately, a big performance from Vorskla, high intensity pressing from the very off, and just looked quite good. Alun came back after sort of being dropped for a number of games following, I think, a few poor performances. And yeah, I mean, Vorskla look the business. Hopefully they'll do well in the Europa Conference League if they make it next season.
Certainly hope so. I mean, Ray, let's talk about Kulac for a second. Obviously, with the national team in mind, goals were at a premium in March. Would you like to see him being given a chance in the friendlies in the run-up to the Euros in the summer?
Yeah, certainly, I would love to. We mentioned him when we spoke about national team before, and so that's a great opportunity for him. He makes the difference and he does his best to get into the roster, but you know how it is with Shevchenko and his colleagues. So yeah, but I'm optimistic.
You say that, well, I'm going to look at Andrew here for this one, because if I forget it, I know Andrew will remember it. Am I right didn't Shevchenko pick somebody? It was, wasn't it? A boy from Dnipro in the last national team squad. Are the signs there that perhaps Kudelich could sneak in, if Dovbyk was given a go?
Potentially. You never know. He might get a call up in the extended list for those friendlies in May and then probably ultimately get cut depending on how he performs. Kulich has had a call up before for the national team. I think it was maybe 2 years ago or even three.
Pre-Shevchenko.
No, it was under Shevchenko. So he has been called up by him. It was when he was impressing for, I think, it was either Alexandria or during his first stint at Vorskla in 2018, potentially. But I don't think he actually debuted. So ultimately, Shevchenko said in his last press conference after that quite poor draw against Kazakhstan that he's opened his eyes, like he's opening his eyes now, and he's going to be focusing on everyone just because some players have disappointed him, etc. However, you got to bear in mind that Dovbyk only got called up because Besedin got injured. I think that he's probably going to go for Marias, Yaremchuk and Besedin unless an injury pops up, which may put Kulich in with a rare chance. But, you know, unfortunately, I just don't see Shevchenko sort of going for it.
It's a real shame as well. As you just mentioned, Besedin is the greatest defensive footballer in defensive centre forward. But when it comes to the Euros, we're hoping he's going to get a few goals. As mentioned, he's only got four in the UPL this year since coming back in 2021. Correct me if I'm wrong, was it a case of COVID, an illness still sort of messing around with Zarya's squad? And that's why we had sort of the makeshift lineup, or is Skripnik experimenting, thinking third place is a shoe?
It looks like a bit of both, to be honest. I'm not entirely sure what's going on there, but all of the goals that Vorskla scored, it was like slicing through butter, really. It was like a nice little through ball, and it just completely split the centre backs in half and easy finishes for the forwards.
That's a shame. We're going to expect big changes at Zorya in the summer with the players expected to move on there. But we get used to it in the UPL, don't we? Teams very rarely stay the same for a while. About Felipe, you probably see the same thing in Brazil as well with the amount of turnover of players there.
The same, yes.
Then, earlier on Saturday, of course, we had a shock victory down in Uzhgorod, didn't we, Andrew? That was a turn-up for the books. But I think we've seen the reason why, though. Looking at sort of the pre-podcast notes, I think I've identified a flaw in Desna's game plan. Am I right there? What was the game like, anyway?
Well, it wasn't like anything out of the ordinary, like as in the Snow were actually the better side. They had more attempts on goal, better possession, etc. But ultimately, Minai were just more clinical on the day. And it was one of those sort of anomaly matches where they just ended up winning. The issue was, I guess, the side that the Snow started with, they were missing their sort of best central midfield, I guess, like Bilo Tarkovsky, or as he's known, and Totovitsky were missing. So they were playing sort of the old boys there, like Ohiria, Dombrovski. They're not the fastest, you know, they're not the most effective. And ultimately, it was just the class of Nureyev once more pulling out, scoring a lovely goal from some sort of Shakhtar-style build-up play that we've seen before. Nice little back heel. He took it past the player and finished. And yeah, just now we're just sort of adrift of ideas, and probably a big loss for them, really, especially with their hopes of trying to qualify for the Europa Conference League too. And even they could have, if they had that win, they would have been having a slight edge over Zorya. So, you know, not sure what went on there, but it's a big, big win for Minai, who are no longer bottom of the league and potentially have the edge over Ruch in that relegation.
We got no idea what's going on at the bottom of the league. That one, I think, is going to go right down to the last day. I've been saying for a while, though, whenever I've watched Desna play, they've lacked creativity. They've lacked that impotence. Apart from Totovitsky, that as far as I can see, they have struggled for goals this year, and you know they didn't replace Filipov when he left. So for me, when I saw that Totovitsky missed the game, I expect to see them struggle. I really do. Now Nureyev. He's an interesting character, isn't he? Do we see him at, first of all, do we see him at Minai next year? And secondly, any teams you think he may suit in the summer window inside Ukraine, shall we say? Ray, no, pick on you.
I would go for Vorskla and Desna because he is a skillful forward and he is a set-piece taker as well. So he's not a target man as we used to in Ukrainian league. So he's more the like of Stepanyuk, I would say, and probably Kulich, but Kulich is more agile. So and Nureyev has strength. So yeah, it's a good opportunity for him to step up and move on in a stronger side. That would be a miracle if he stays in United, to be honest.
I actually think, yeah, Desna would be a good shout for him. I don't know. Andrew, do you see Desna, Vorskla, good location?
I mean, yeah. Well, they're missing, as we've already mentioned, they're missing a sort of a forward. And I've heard that he signed a one-year contract extension at some point, either this year or earlier towards the end of last year, which means that obviously he's only staying an extra season. But that seems to be more like to ensure that Minai gets some compensation for him. And now he's, you know, an international striker with Azerbaijan. Who knows? Maybe he might move to Karabakh.
You know how to get the controversy going there, don't you? Now, obviously, the weekend started off over in Lviv with this sort of what started as a week of shocks hasn't finished it, but certainly Lviv got the ball rolling rather well on Friday night, didn't they? How's that made the picture look? What's going on with Alexandria? Is it that they've just packed up for the summer already? Just sort of 6-7 games early? Andrew?
I mean, yeah. So, Lviv living up to their manager's name so far, Besmetny, which obviously means immortal in Ukrainian. They are seemingly clinging on to their UPL status, and every time it seems like they're going to be dragged back into that relegation spot, they pull a random win out of nowhere. Decent performance, but ultimately Alexandria came with like a slightly second string side. They were playing, you know, Drishlyuk was given a go, Ustimenko was starting, Shastal, like a load of all these youngsters. We're giving a go, Bilic in goal. Bit of a weird one. I think, like you said, Alexandria are packing up already because it looks like they can't realistically make the European spots. They're like 9 places off. But I guess they decided that was the case a good 4 games ago because they're now on a 4-game loss streak. And it's difficult to really understand what's going on there. I was watching Tattle to Care, his latest episode earlier on today, and there was a mention that potentially there's some like weird betting stuff going on regarding just like the fact that Alexandria are going to lose. Maybe some sort of inside information that they've sort of thrown the towel in. Who knows? I don't know. But I've also heard from Oleg Yashchuk, who's journalist who's quite close to Alexandria. He believes that a lot of their star players, so Kovalets, Luchkevich, all that lot, they're probably going to be leaving this summer. So a big overhaul needed. And, you know, I guess maybe the period of Alexandria challenging for third and fourth as you've already seen, has slowed now this season quite massively, and might need a new start and sort of a new expectation of what's going on, especially with the league expanding to 16 teams. You know, if they don't change something, they're going to end up being one of those bottom half sides.
And just an indication there as well of the strength of the UPL, that it's a lot tougher for clubs on Alexandria's budget to compete at that top end as well. Just reminded me there, you were talking about all the young players getting a chance and the stars sort of having packed up. Reminds me of Vorskla last season when they sent everyone off on holiday about 3 weeks before the end of the season, played the youth players, and they've come back, hit the ground running, and been apart from Dinamo, been probably the surprise package of the season at the moment compared to how they performed last week. Now, the final game, not the final game, Kolos Dnipro is still 0-0 at the moment, but the final game that has finished was Mariupol Olympic, you know, battle of probably the two poorest teams in the two most out of form teams. I'm not going to say poorest, but most out of form teams in the league. And surprisingly, as correct me if I'm wrong, have Olympic picked up their first point in 2021? Here we are, 18th of April, and they've got off the big zero. Even Sheffield United managed to avoid that ignominy a while back as well. How did they do it, Andrew? How on earth did they manage that?
Well, they've got Nkeng, their January signing, to thank for a first-half penalty after Kulakov scored for Mariupol. Ultimately, rather uneventful game. Not the most entertaining, as we know both sides can be. But yeah, I mean, the Yaya Toure de facto curse, it has been broken, you could say. Yaya Toure also picks up his first point as an assistant coach at Olympic after joining in January. So, you know, positive signs, given them a little boost ahead of the big relegation battle, because like we said, 8 defeats in a row has put them right amongst it. And I guess it's probably even more exciting than last year's relegation battle, where we weren't too sure who was going to end up going down from that.
Quite right. Yeah. You just reminded me there, as I tend to do if I haven't got my notes in front of me. I forgot about the relegation battle this week, didn't I? Because you didn't remind me of that one. You didn't remind me of that one. Of course, Ingolets played Rook earlier today, and they won't let me forget it. I mean, people will try and forget the game by the sounds of it. It wasn't the most elegant on the eye, but both teams have finished up with a point there. Spoke with our good friend Mladen Bartolovic. Ingolets are, you know, I think, very happy with the point. I know there's some concerns in Ingolets that they are still to play Dinamo and Shakhtar in the remaining four match days, and hoping that they've got enough points to keep them there. But the relegation battle is certainly hotting up with, if correct me if I'm wrong, there's probably five or six teams still in danger of going down. If Alexandria need to be careful, because they're only 9 points clear with four games to go, the way we're getting these shock results each week, they could end up still being involved on the last match day as well. So God knows what's going to go on there. For those of you at home, we're going to have a relegation special, I think, in a few weeks to really have a look at the runners and riders in who's going to drop out and say goodbye to the UPL at the end of this year. Well, that's it for today. If I haven't forgotten anything else, apart from Ingolets and Rook, I do apologise. I have forgotten something. Thank you, Andrew.
No, it's actually on the topic of forgetting things. Quite a funny story that came at the end of Luis Castro's press conference last night. He was asked, what's the latest on Vladislav Vakula? And he responded saying, he's not our player. He's at Mariupol, but apparently he's still on like the Shakhtar B list in the official UPL website. So apparently no one knows where he is. So that's going to end it on that.
Poor old Vlad. Hopefully he'll find a club next year. That's all we can say. But yeah, that's it for today, guys. I hope you've enjoyed it. I certainly have. We've had a few laughs and giggles along the way. Felipe, thank you so much for taking your time out to join us. For people at home who want to follow your story, of course, Felipe commentates for...
DAZN Brazil.
DAZN. I was going to call it BLZN. DAZN Brazil. Yes. And you can follow him live with them. Well, if they want to follow you on social media, is there anywhere where they can connect with you?
I'm not that good on social media, to be honest, but I'm on Instagram. I don't actually use it that much. It's been probably more than 1 year that I don't post anything. But yeah, anyway, it's my name Felipe, and my surname Petrosino, which wouldn't be that easy to find me.
we'll put it in the tags anyway. Well, we hope you've enjoyed it and have a safe journey home.
Thank you very much.
We hope to see you in Ukraine in the near future again.
Hopefully, I do hope so. Thank you very much, guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And Ray, great as always, providing wonderful insight. Thanks so much for being by our side, as you are every week. For new listeners, where can they follow you on social media, mate?
Thanks, Adam. It's a pleasure as always. My social media are Instagram, Oval and Casual.
And Mr. Zorya Londonsk, premier English language media source, fountain of knowledge on everything Ukrainian football wise. Where can people follow you?
You've already said it, Adam. Sorry, Londonsk on Twitter and Instagram. Been
just
a pleasure. Been a good
one. Keep pitching it. Listen, everyone, have a great week. We'll be back at the same time next week with another fantastic episode of Ukrainian Football Review. I'm Adam, of course, at UkraFoot24. You can follow me across the social medias as well. But till next time, everyone, take care and stay safe. Bye-bye for now.